Nights and Hours International. I've got something I can talk about right now that we've had to keep secret until this very moment, and that is the results of the New Zealand Book Awards for children and young adults. We've got a winner, and here to tell us about it is Judge Jane Arthur. Kia ora, Jane.
Kia ora.
It must have been a pretty tricky thing to choose.
Yeah, there was such strong books this year. There were some, you know, some of our favourites that didn't make the shortlist, but we are so excited to share the winner this year.
How many judges? Were you on your own there, or were there several of you?
Yeah, there were five of us in total, five of us all around the country.
How much arguing into the night?
It was a robust few discussions, but no tears were shed. We had to do it all via Zoom, obviously, because the process all happened over lockdown. So that kept us all safe. But, yeah, we all really strongly agreed on the Margaret Mahe Book of the Year Award.
And the winner of that?
The winner of that is Mophead by Selena Tupitala Marsh, published by Auckland University Press.
What was it about this book that really caught your eye, in fact, caught your heart?
It's just so its own beautiful, perfect thing. I remember the first time we had a Zoom meeting of all the judges, and we got to the discussion of this book, and before any of us ever said anything on the video screen, you could see we all just kind of clutched our hearts. We sort of all just went, oh, and just because we loved it so much, and it was almost like, how do you describe it? Because it's sort of a picture book, it's sort of a memoir, it's a celebration, it's a personal story, it's an inspiration. It's just so many things that just sort of reached us on this really emotive level.
And who would have known that such an accomplished poet was also a really good artist?
I know. It's so great. And it's just so pared back and just sort of, you know, line drawings, but just so much character. We love it. The design is just fantastic as well.
It's not an elaborate artistic style she's got, but the likenesses, particularly the one of Sam Hunt, is particularly good.
Yeah, with his pants.
Actually, it's true. That's the pants. I hadn't thought about that, but it was the jacket that I really noticed. The jacket with the poem sticking out of the pocket and Minstrel the dog by his feet. Yeah. So there's lots of lovely humour in this as well.
Yeah, and you just touched on it. It sort of talks to, it's not just children that this is going to speak to. You know, the judges are all adults, and we all felt inspired by it. And you've just sort of seen it. Something to recognise in there as well. So we really think it's got a wide audience, and we hope that this award, you know, shares it around some more.
Is it also, I guess, the inspirational aspect of the book, which is to be yourself and to not to be shy or ashamed of what makes you special, what makes you different?
Absolutely. And the power of every single person to shape our own stories and our own meaning from our lives, you know, the sort of points that Selena has picked out from her life to form this really beautiful story. She could have chosen other points and formed another story, but it just sort of, there's a lesson there in storytelling and meaning making as well, I think.
Yeah, well, there's another thing in there, and that is the influence of others. Sam Hunt, obviously, is a big part, a pivotal part of the narrative. But at the end, there's the story which she doesn't quite tell, but you know is coming. And that is coming across the kid who mocks the tokotoko that she's got and says, it looks like a mop. And of course, there's this wonderful symmetry about that as well, isn't there?
Yeah, and then it's like, well, let me tell you a story. And it's a beautiful, sort of sends you back to the beginning of the book, beginning of her story again.
Have you got kids of your own, Jane?
Yeah, I've got a child of my own and stepchildren as well.
When you pick their brains on something like this?
Yeah, occasionally I do, sort of, especially with some of the picture books and illustration, just say, hey, you know, which ones are speaking to you? Just to get, you know, their idea on that sort of thing.
Because it's an interesting challenge, adult judges judging books for children.
Yeah, but the thing about adults is that we've all been children and we're all kind of still carrying a part of our child self within us. So
yes.
I think that's fine.
Yes, children, and do you try...
Children are great judges in their own way, but I think, you know, I don't think there's a problem with adults judging, because, I mean, I'm still a big kid.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Is that what you do? You kind of try and go back to and imagine yourself as a child again and how the child in you would respond to this.
Absolutely. So often in the judging process, one of us would say, oh, I would have loved this if I was a kid. You know, when I was a kid, this is exactly the kind of book I wish I could read or that I loved reading. Still love reading.
And when does it all start again? The next awards?
I think in around about November, the call for submissions, don't quote me on that, but yeah, around about November, I think the sort of call for submissions for the 2021 awards will happen.
Hopefully we won't have a lockdown to deal with when you're judging next year. Although maybe you will do some more stuff on the phone.
Yeah, on Zoom or Microsoft Teams. Yeah.
Jane, thanks.
It'll be nice to have an in-person celebration next year.
Jane, thanks so much for joining us tonight. Thanks for spilling the beans for us, although we sat on it for a while. And good luck for next year. Hope the standard's just as high in 2021.
I'm sure it will be. Thanks so much.
Jane Arthur, one of the judges of the 2020 Children's Book Awards, the supreme winner being former poet laureate Selina Tusitala-Marsh in her wonderful book Mophead. She also did the illustrations. I caught up with her not too long ago, asked her about the genesis of the book.
I was in a meeting with my publisher, Sam Alworthy, at Auckland University Press, and I was coming up to finishing my tenure as the poet laureate, and I'd been writing through the whole experience and meditating on the question of, you know, how do I hold the fire without burning out? And that was prompted by the laureate tokotoko that each poet laureate has carved for them by Jacob Scott from Matahiwi Marae in Hawke's Bay. And he had named my tokotoko Tusitala Kapura, and Kapura means long, slow-burning flame. And he said that was a reflection of my status now and that others could take their spark from me. And I was beautifully overwhelmed in a great way. And then, you know, as a 40, then I was 48, I'm 49 now, but, you know, mid-career, everything's bursting, looking after kids and parents and full-time uni job and full-time poetry job and making. I was like many women I know, especially Māori and Pacifica women, was kind of feeling like those words burnout were becoming a regular kind of spectre haunting me on my horizon. And so I started thinking, well, how will this tokotoko show me, you know, through a poetic meditation, how to hold this fire without burning out? And so, Brian, what was your question?
It was.
See, that's part of the
did you
the
illustrate
burnout.
The book?
Okay.
You got on quite a lovely tangent, but it was such a nice tangent. I didn't want to stop you.
You know, that's key, though.
Because I was going to ask
you
about the tokotoko.
Yes. Well, so I'd written this memoir, which, you know, was a poetic meditation on each of the 11 pieces, distinct pieces that, you know, because it comes apart. Jacob knew that I needed to travel and tell the poet laureate's story everywhere I went. So I ended up, you know, taking this tokotoko to 12 countries and 40 plus cities and towns and villages and telling the tale. And it wasn't any coincidence that I was also the 11th poet laureate. So it was telling me, write about me, I have things to tell you. And so I had the 60,000 word written memoir of my poet laureateship and my life, and, you know, based on a poetic meditation on each of these pieces. And Sam was really excited. Yep, let's do it. Get us a draft. And I almost walked out of his office and I said, oh, I've just been doodling, you know, just mucking around with this other thing. And he was like, oh, yeah. And I said, yeah, I've actually got a whole draft book thing. I've just done all the pictures. And he went, oh, take a seat. And so I pulled out my very old iPad at the time and showed him Mophead. And he just looked at me and he said, you know what? This is of its time right here, right now. Let's pursue this. And, you know, so we put the written memoir aside, and Mophead, I began working seriously on Mophead, because the whole narrative arc was there, right? The, you know, when I was presented my tokotoko, it's got this huge head of hair, you know.
Yes.
And it looks like a mop, right?
Yeah, exactly. I wasn't sure whether to mention that, because that's kind of giving a lot of the story away, but you've brought it up. But the head of hair, there's the mop head.
Yes.
Now, the mop head initially relates to your own experience as a kid.
Yes.
Being the daughter of a Samoan.
Yes.
And the daughter of a Palangi.
Yes.
And I didn't realise this. So if you'd been born to a Samoan mum and dad, would you not have got the wonderful head of hair that you've got? Is it the combination of the genes that makes it go all springy?
Well, in our family, that certainly is the case, because my Samoan Tuvaluan mum had long, wavy hair, and my sister has kind of straightish hair, and my brother has straightish hair. You know, it just was a combination of genes, because my dad's got, as the book, you know, has a double page spread of the hair equation, you know, has a slightly thinner and I got landed with the big mop, and proudly so, until, you know, you go to school, you know, you're so proud of yourself, you know, if you're raising a loving family, you don't see yourself from other people's eyes except for those who love you, and then you go to school and suddenly it's like, the difference makes the difference, but in a negative way. And mercilessly teased as Mophead, you know, by my frenemy at the time, Brian.
Your frenemy?
Mm-hmm.
Are you still frenemies now? or just friends?
I haven't kept in contact with her, although I know one day we will have a conversation. Yeah.
You will. That'll be interesting.
Yeah, it will be.
That
yeah.
could be a kiddie's book coming up.
Oh, no, I've already got the third one
head.
Yes.
Really?
Yes,
oh.
Really.
Yeah, and I was only going to ask you about the second one.
Yeah, right, I mean, do I have another job? I mean, you know, at the moment, this I'm just going with the energy and the flow. And the thing is, I get so much fan mail from writing, you know, from having written Mophead. And I get fan mail as a poet, but not to this degree, Brian. And I don't get sent beautiful pictures and collages, and people don't share stories of their difference, whether that difference is as, you know, a large, very pale-skinned, red-headed man, or, you know, someone who has moppy hair like me.
And the mop, which is also the image you use for the head of the tokotoko, the head that's a Samoan connection. That's a fue, isn't it?
That's right. It's a talking chief's ritual fly whisk. So when a chief stands up and talks on behalf of the high chief, he has a tokotoko or a to'oto'o and the fly whisk, and he, you know, sweeps it through the air to clear anything that might block the chief's message from being heard or received well by the villagers. So, and I was gifted that by Tuia Tuatupua Tamasese, who we, you know, see as royalty in Samoa.
And it became the 11th part of the tokotoko.
It did.
Its head.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And now mm-hmm. you have somebody who grew up being called Mophead. You have a tokotoko, which is a little like a mophead, which was something that, had you made that connection, or was it because of an 11-year-old? Was it an 11-year-old? Was it a boy on the ferry at Waiheke, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Who noticed the likeness to a... What's that funny stick thing with a big head of hair on the top?
Yeah. I saw it, and when it was unveiled, because I saw it for the first time at the Poet Laureate ceremony at Matahiwi Marae, and Jacob came out, and she was covered in this black cloth, and as he did his speech, and he was quite emotional, you know, he took the cover off and there she stood, and I just burst into tears, because it's like, wow, that kid, I mean, I did see the mop, and I said, that kid back there is now this woman here, and society is supporting, you know, and wanting to hear the stories.
When you were a kid at school, did you ever consider trying to tame your hair?
Well, I did, like in Mophead, you know, I there was a point where it was like, this is just too tough to be different. So I'm going to pull it back into a bun and be the same like everyone else and look like everyone else. But something happens when you constrain your naturally wild self, and it impacts on your own personality. So it would always, the hair had its own life, right? It would always find its way out of any nice and neat tight buns, and it would literally break the other kinds of clips that the girls wore. So, you know, in the end it was like, you know, stuff it. I've just got to be me. I've just got to be me. And
did that relate to a visit by Sam Hunt?
It absolutely did. I mean, it was one of many epiphanies I had, but in terms of Sam embodying the wild hair and the wild words and not giving a stuff, you know, for good or for ill, but he really didn't care. And, you know, I was raised as a good Samoan Tuvaluan Balangi daughter, you know, and I just did as I was told, and I would have these, you know, rebellious thoughts, but they were always kind of, I would submit them to other people's expectations of me. And as all people pleasers know, that's ingrained in you, and it's very difficult to let go of.
Do poets still go to schools like Sam did?
Yes, they do. I'm part of a Writers in Schools program with Read New Zealand.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that.
Te Pō Muramura. Yeah, beautiful program, beautiful. We reach so many kids. Yeah.
He came to my school. I mean, it's so many people listening to this will be, I remember Sam coming to my school.
Exactly.
And it was, yeah, it was the same for me. I mean, I didn't become a poet, but certainly somebody who was an authentic self, you know, who a free
yes.
spirit and who loved words, and the kids loved him. We all
yes.
loved him.
Yes, yes. I call him in one of my poems titled Orange Crown Stick Figure Man, I call him the Pied Piper, because he sang and we followed. You know, he played his voice, his whole body was an instrument, you know, that just vibrated with these, his own and other people's poetry. And it was my incredible privilege to finally spend some time with Sam. Like, well, I'd see him on the road, you know, and about
like walking along the road.
No, well, no. When you work, you know, when you go and perform
at
festivals,
yeah.
and we'd share a green room briefly, and then we'd go. But he invited me up to Kaipara Harbour, and so 2.5 months ago, I found myself being driven by my sister Sam to go visit my poetry idol Sam and take the tokotoko to him to get his blessing on it. And we just spent the most crazy, wild day up there. And the rest is for a short story. I can't air publicly what we got up to.
That's all right. You've given us lots of sneak previews of what you're doing, what you're working on. That mop that you likened your head to, that head of hair, and the fact that you also were quite a skinny kid.
Mm.
Is that still in the family?
It better not be. It's no, but, you know, it was one of those cotton woven mops.
Yeah, I remember them.
Yep, and they would just hold the stench, right? If they got damp and then left in a corner, they would just hold that stench. And I would, you know, have to mop out the laundry, which we had as a separate you know, attachment to our old villa that we grew up in Avondale. And I dreaded that job. I hated that. I'd always think that rats would crawl out of it or something, you know, even if we sunned it, and it still had that really smelly, damp.
I can't remember the smell, but I remember that when Mum got that mop out, it was a big job.
Yeah,
whatever it was, it was a big job.
That's right.
It was possibly the washing machine overflowing again. One of those ones,
yeah,
the mop job.
One,
in fact, sometimes
one.
Maybe even Mum would hand the mop to Dad.
Well, you know, I would muck around, as it shows in Mophead. Like, I'd be out there for ages not doing the job I was meant to. I would be using it, like, as a horse. I'd pretend it was Black Beauty. I'd pretend I was climbing mountains. I'd pretend I was singing in it. You know, I was such a daydreamer, honestly.
You've got children of your own now, don't you?
Yes, I do. 3 sons.
And how are their heads of hair?
You know, if they grew them, because they like their military-style cuts, if they grew them, they could get froze. Definitely.
Is that
two
a bit,
older ones.
Are they trying to establish their own way of being? So it's the opposite of you. They've cut their hair.
Everything
short.
Opposite to mum. Mum reads, boys don't read. Mum eats vegetables, boys don't eat vegetables. Yeah, that one.
Have you tried the reverse psychology?
Hey, I watch junk TV too, as much as the next person. No, it doesn't work, not at all.
And there are more kids' books on the way.
Oh my gosh, yeah. So, at the most inconvenient time, you know, we were deep in, like, maybe the seventh revision of Mophead. I wake up on Saturday morning. I don't even get out of bed. I just reach over my husband, grab my journal, and I storyboard Mophead 2, the Queen's poem.
Oh, fantastic. And now, the illustrations. Let's go back to that question I tried to ask you right at the beginning, and which went off in another direction. So have you always been an artist, a doodler, as well as a writer?
I have great difficulty claiming that title, artist. Gavin Bishop and I, you know, amazing children's author and illustrator, we interviewed each other, and he took me out. He actually kind of said to me, "You're not a doodler.
No,
you don't doodle.
There's
like
a bit
this.
More to this than doodling."
Yes, he said, "Doodling's kind of free lining, and you're meandering. You're not really thinking." He said, "This is drawing. You're an artist. These are planned."
Yeah,
you know. But I mean, no, I never. You know, I did art in the sixth and seventh form, but not like this. And it was so important, you know, when I spoke to Sam Elworthy, because he did offer, he said, look, we can contract out the drawings to a professional illustrator, because when he saw them, they were really rough. And I said, yeah, nah.
Yeah, I'm so glad. I'm so glad. I'm looking right now at your likeness of Sam Hunt. Uh-huh. And there he is, tall and thin. You know, he's got with his head of mop head of hair, and there's the poems in his pocket and his jacket, fancy jacket. And the bit I like most is Minstrel down the corner there.
Who he had to take back. He had to take two things back when he walked into our Avondale school hall. He had to take the dog back and put it in his red convertible car, and he had to take the bottle of beer that he had. He walked in the school hall with.
One last question. That kid on the ferry.
Mm-hmm.
Did you tell him a story?
I did tell him a story.
Ah.
And I told him about each piece of the tokotoko and, you know, what the major pieces went. And he was like, oh, wow, yeah, far out. Yep. You know, something did happen to me in Wellington last year that showed me, in, you know, who that little kid might have grown up to be had I not taken the time to tell him a story and engage him rather than just kind of ignore him or push him away or tease him back, because he was very easily teasable, trust me.
Yes, yeah.
Do I have time to tell that
of
story?
Of course you do.
Oh, okay. All right, so it is the night when National Library are farewelling me as their New Zealand Poet Laureate. And I've had a beautiful evening. Kids from Haita College, had presented cultural performances for me. I was huckered in. It was so beautiful. Lots of people. It was 11 o'clock at night. Gig is finished. And, you know, I often, when I'm surrounded by lots of people and I give out a lot and I receive a lot, I like to be alone. I need to be alone. So I walked from the National Library through Parliament and up, I forget what the street is, but there's a street with the James Cook Hotel on it and other.
Oh, that's the terrace.
Terrace.
It's the street we're on right now.
And up the terrace. And so by then it's like 11:15. I'm dressed in this bright fuchsia pulutasi or Samoan formal dress. I've got my hair out, my tokotoko, a backpack on, and I get to the James Cook Hotel and it's got these glass doors, and I'm about to open them and I see a knot of Pākehā businessmen at the reception desk. So obviously they've just come out of the bar and they're just milling around. And, you know, everything in my body says, stop, breathe, arm yourself. As woman, as brown, as not of this area, right? And there's that little voice that's saying, don't be ridiculous, you're just, you know, you're being paranoid. But my life experience gives me these, I know how to read these signals, right? So I open the door, I take one step in, and the group, there are about five or six businessmen, turn to me, and the alpha male, and I know he's the alpha male because he's the only one with an open collared shirt, everyone else is wearing their ties and suit jackets, right? He calls out and he says, oh ho, it's the cleaner.
Oh dear. And then what did you do?
I strode right up to the middle of the group. Well, they were blocking the elevator anyway, and I strode up to the middle to them, and I said, you obviously don't. Oh no, I said, do you know who you're talking to? And he said, and they were all kind of elbowing each other, and I said, I'm your New Zealand poet laureate, and this is our national treasure, and you've just called it a mop. And then they just kind of looked at me, and I started walking away, and then the alpha male came up to me, and he's like, hey, forget about them, look at what I've got, and he digs inside his business shirt and pulls out this ponamu, and he says, I've been hunting for this for years, and I finally found it last year. And I just looked at him and I, you know, just ignored him, pushed the elevator button and went upstairs, and then wrote a really long short story about it, in which I imagine a different ending where I kind of switch a button on the tokotoko and out comes this little switchblade from its foot, and I kind of disembowel him and step over his steaming innards without mopping it up.
Because that's what writers can do.
That's why imagination is so important.
Your brain is a universe, Selena. And you keep on being yourself. Thank you so much for your time tonight.
Thank you so much, Brian.
And congratulations again.
Whakatai, tele lover.
Selena Tusitala-Marsh, winner of the New Zealand Book Awards for Children and Young Adults, supreme winner Margaret Mahi, Book of the Year, for her wonderful volume, Mophead.